Tuesday, December 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a new poll reveals many Americans believe the U.S. is losing the campaign against terror.
ISIS is showing itself to be a durable, effective, persistent, lethal threat, and we should be doing more to counter that threat.
The media organization Reporters Without Borders says Syria and France were the deadliest countries for journalists in 2015, and we'll hear about the latest version of the Shakespearean tragedy Macbeth. It's all ahead. A new national poll reveals that despite recent setbacks, the rise of the Islamic State has convinced a large minority of Americans surveyed that terrorists are winning the war against extremism. The poll, conducted by the cable news network CNN and Opinion Research Corporation, shows 40% say the terrorists have the upper hand. The results follow a series of events, including the mass shootings in Paris and California, and the perception that the government's anti-terror response has been inadequate. Nearly three-quarters said they're dissatisfied with the progress in the war on terror, and a majority are unhappy with the Obama administration's response, especially the policy on defeating the Islamic State, or ISIS. Tom Sanderson, director of the Transnational Threat Program at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty it's difficult to determine who's actually winning and that the issue will play a significant role in the 2016 U.S. presidential election.
I would certainly say that ISIS is very strong. They are on the march in many places. They are losing territory in other places. But generally speaking, I do think that ISIS is showing itself to be a durable, effective, persistent, lethal threat. And we should be doing more to counter that threat. But I don't think we need to act like we are under siege and under attack and that this is an existential threat.
Tom, what are the implications for the 2016 election?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Candidates on the right are going to use the advances by ISIS, including the attacks in the U.S., to portray Hillary Clinton as part of a weak Obama-led response that she was originally a part of. And I think that's going to be something she will have to face down, but I think something that she can challenge quite effectively. But the Republicans do have a point that the president does not seem to be out in front of this on a messaging level. And they're claiming that also on a policy level with the strategy that he's not doing well either. And the reality is they simply don't know all of what's going on behind the scenes. Nobody does except for those people who are directly engaged on the counter-ISIS effort. And a lot is going on. I do believe more should be going on. But the implications are significant for the race.
Tom Sanderson still believes the November election will turn on both foreign and domestic issues. Max Abrams, an analyst with Northeastern University in Boston, tells Victor Beatty it's quite common for observers to believe the terrorists are winning.
Almost regardless of what the outcome of the violence happens to be, observers conclude that that's exactly what the terrorists wanted to happen. So, for example, after the 2001 terrorist attack, President Bush decided for the U.S. to occupy Iraq. And many people at the time said, don't occupy Iraq, because that's exactly what al-Qaeda wants. In 2004, al-Qaeda struck Madrid in the train attack, and Spain had the opposite reaction. It withdrew its forces from Iraq. And at the time, critics said, well, that's exactly what al-Qaeda wants. So whether the terrorists provoked a country or whether they forced the country into becoming more conciliatory, observers will very often conclude that that's exactly what the terrorists want. And so for that reason, people all the time tend to overestimate the skill and the sophistication and intelligence of terrorists. The fact that so many Americans think that the terrorists are winning isn't actually an indication that the terrorists are winning.
Well, do you see the numbers changing in the new year if, in fact, this decline becomes persistent?
Yes, I do. I think that there's probably a lag between what's going on in the world of Islamic State and how it's perceived by Americans. And if there are continued successes against Islamic State, I think Americans will have to change their minds. Although all of that is contingent on the U.S. homeland remaining safe.
That's Max Abrams of Northeastern University. Among the survey's conclusions are that the White House understands that beyond a coherent and winning military strategy, it also needs a domestic plan to win the political debate over the threat of terrorism. Well, looking at social media for today, there are a number of posts about the arrests of two people in Brussels. Prosecutors in Belgium said Tuesday police arrested the two and they're suspected of planning holiday terror attacks in the Belgian city. They said investigators found evidence pointing to the threat of serious attacks that would target several emblematic places on New Year's Eve. Prosecutors said the case was not connected to the November 13th attacks in Paris that killed at least 130 people. Several of the suspects in those attacks, including the presumed ringleader, had links to Belgium. Well, also trending today is hashtag Lemmy, with more than 700,000 tweets. It's named for the British rock icon Lemmy, the lead singer and bass player for Motorhead, and he's died at the age of 70, 2 days after being diagnosed with cancer. Born Ian Kilmister, Lemmy formed Motorhead in 1975. He was known for his aggressive bass and his gravelly voice on such songs as Bomber, Overkill, and the band's most famous track, Ace of Spades. If you like to gamble, I tell you. Many rock and heavy metal musicians have been paying tribute to the Motorhead frontman. On Twitter, Ozzy Osbourne called him a warrior and a legend. Meanwhile, on Facebook, Foo Fighters posted, "We've lost a friend and legend." Metallica tweeted that it would be forever grateful for all your inspiration. While confirming his death, Motorhead urged fans to play Lemmy's music loud. Have a drink or few, share stories, celebrate the life this lovely, wonderful man celebrated so vibrantly himself. He would want exactly that. Well, also trending is hashtag comfort women. South Korea and Japan reached an agreement this week designed to end decades of strained relations stemming from the forced use of Korean women in Japanese military-run brothels during World War II. The deal includes an apology from Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and a more than $8 million payment to the dozens of now elderly survivors of the ordeal. And that's social media. In other news, Europe in 2015 faced its most severe migration crisis in centuries as an estimated 1 million people, mostly Muslims, fled war in Syria and poverty in other countries of the Middle East and Africa for Western European nations. With another 3 million people expected in 2016, the mass migration has raised questions about the future of Europe. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports.
Migrants had been pouring into Europe for months, but images of a drowned 3-year-old Syrian boy on a Turkish beach in September shocked the world and drew Western sympathy for those fleeing a worsening conflict in Syria. Thousands embarked daily on the trek through Turkey, Greece, the Balkans, and finally to a gap in the border fence between Serbia and Hungary, the last stretch before reaching the Austrian border, the gateway to Western Europe. In Vienna, trains arriving from Hungary were met by applause. Young Austrian women welcomed the migrants and refugees with candies and cigarettes. This woman, Denise Neuhauser, said Europe could not turn these people away, and questions about culture and assimilation are another discussion for another time.
I really don't know what the bigger picture is, but right now it's take care of the people, give them food, give them drink, give them shelter, and let them pass through.
A focal point of the influx was Budapest's main train station, where most said their final destination was Germany or Sweden, where generous public assistance programs promised them a future. There, Tariq, a 25-year-old university student from a suburb of Damascus, said Hungary offered him food and a place to sleep, but no money. He was heading for Germany.
Germany help people if they need to study, if they need to make a new life.
But signs of strain came quickly for Europe. Hungary, overwhelmed, put up a razor fence and in October closed its border. In November, Sweden's Prime Minister Stefan Löfven announced tighter border controls and asylum rules.
Det här är en ohållbar situation. Det är uppenbart att
migrationen. The Swedish leader called the migrant situation untenable and said it is clear the migration policies of the European Union need to be completely reviewed. European skepticism grew even more after the terrorist attacks in Paris. Two of the attackers had traveled to Europe undetected, posing as refugees. Earlier in the year, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said her country is a strong, prosperous society with the strength to help and absorb the migrants. By year's end, that welcoming attitude appeared to have shifted under the pressure of the sheer numbers of new arrivals and political pressure at home. Speaking at her Christian Democratic Union Party's year-end convention, Merkel said Germany wants to and will reduce the number of refugees entering the country. 2015 ended with discussions among EU members on beefing up the borders, but Europe has no comprehensive plan on dealing with the influx, a phenomenon that leaders say will continue to be a test for the region in 2016 and beyond. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Could playing Tetris, a classic video puzzle game, help drug addicts and compulsive eaters overcome or reduce their addictions or obsessions with food? Psychologists in the UK and Australia worked with 31 college students as test subjects. The students were randomly sent text message prompts 7 times throughout the day over a week-long period, asking them to report any cravings they were feeling. About half of the volunteers who reported cravings were also told to play Tetris on an iPod for 3 minutes. Following gameplay, the subjects again reported on the intensity of their cravings. The researchers found that playing Tetris can weaken cravings for drugs, cigarettes, alcohol, coffee, and food by as much as 20%. Lowered cravings were also observed in the volunteers for sex and sleeping. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at a new film version of the drama known as the Scottish play Macbeth. The Paris-based Reporters Without Borders released a report Tuesday indicating that of 110 journalists killed in 2015, at least 67 were slain for doing their jobs, an increase from the 66 killed in 2014. They were either targeted because of their work or killed while reporting. It brings to nearly 800 killed since 2005. RSF Secretary General Christophe Deloye tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the real surprise in this year's figures is not that many lost their lives in the Middle East, but that so many were killed as a result of the assault on the offices of Charlie Hebdo in the French capital nearly 1 year ago after publishing caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad.
The first countries where such killings took place are, that's no surprise, Syria and Iraq. The surprise is that the third country where so many journalists have been killed in the line on duty or because of their jobs, because of their function, is France. 8 journalists have been killed. It was on January 7th. It was a Charlie Hebdo tragedy. That's the first time that a European country had so many journalists killed in the line of duty. The threats are worldwide. You can be in one country, try to publish your newspaper only for readers in your country, but have guys on the other side of the earth who want to kill you because of what you published. The threat is now on the world scale and not only in the countries where things are published. If we have a look on the figures, this year, 27% of the journalists who have been killed in the line of duty have been killed in their own countries. It's also proof and evidence that the journalists are mostly threatened when they investigate, when they report in their own countries.
And some of these journalists are not just killed in the line of duty, but they are actually being targeted.
Yes, if we have a look, the majority of the journalists killed because of their jobs are really targeted. They are not victims of bombings just because they were in the wrong place in the wrong moment. It's really because some people wanted to prevent them from doing their job, from investigating, from reporting. On the wall, in 10 years, almost 800 journalists have been killed in the line of duty. It's an evidence that the whole protection system of journalists is a failure. That's the word that the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, used in a report published last August. This international law that has been adopted regarding the protection of journalists is a failure. That's why Reporters Without Borders calls on the UN to create the position of a new special representative of the Secretary General of the UN on the protection of journalists.
That's Christophe Deloire. Reporters Without Borders issued a safety guide for journalists earlier this month. Meanwhile, the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists in its own year-end survey said 69 journalists were killed this year, the most in Syria at 13, compared to 61 in 2014, with nearly 1,200 slain since 1992. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. William Shakespeare's tragedy, Macbeth, gets a new treatment from Australian director Justin Kurzel. The film stars Oscar nominee Michael Fassbender as the doomed Scottish king and Oscar winner Marion Cotillard as his ambitious wife. International Edition's David Byrd takes a look.
Director Justin Kurzel's Macbeth opens with the title character and his wife standing next to the grave of their only child. Their grief then transitions into a blood-soaked battle scene, after which a victorious Macbeth meets three witches who tell him that he shall be king of Scotland.
Macbeth, hail to thee, Thane of Clumps.
Macbeth, hail to thee, Thane of Cawdor.
All hail Macbeth, there shall be king hereafter.
There's only one problem. Scotland has a king, Duncan, whom Lady Macbeth, played by Marion Cotillard, persuades her reluctant husband to murder when Duncan visits their castle.
I have given suck, and know how tender it is to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was smiling in my face, have plucked my nipple from his boneless gums and dashed the brains out had I so sworn, as you have done to this.
Michael Fassbender, known for his roles in Shame, Inglourious Basterds, and the X-Men series, says taking on the role of the doomed Scot was something that required a lot from him.
There's just so many endless versions you can do and various sort of interpretations of it. It's just, which is very encouraging and also kind of depressing, because I would walk away thinking, God, you know, there was another thousand ways that that could have been done. But just really becoming comfortable with it.
Cotillard, who won an Oscar for her portrayal of Edith Piaf in La Vie en Rose, says she was reluctant to take the part until she talked to director Justin Kurzel.
The way he talked about the fact that he wanted to show that they were in love with each other, and they wanted, and he wanted to show, yeah, the humanity of these two people, really got me, and gave me the desire to be part of it.
Fassbender says Cotillard brought a new vision to the role and was a joy to work with.
She's a really very sort of unique actor, and the fact that she sort of really works very much in the moment-to-moment sort of elements of a scene. She doesn't come forcing something on a scene. She allows it to sort of organically sort of take place, and that's pretty rare.
The film was shot on location on Scotland's Isle of Skye, and the weather and the landscape play a large role in the story. Kurzel's vision also has the characters working in spare surroundings, not grand castles, but empty, dark, cold landscapes. Battle scenes take place on muddy, wet hillsides, which also add to the feeling of desperation and isolation. Macbeth also stars David Thewlis as Duncan, Paddy Considine as Banquo, and Elizabeth Debicki as the ill-fated Lady Macduff. Macbeth is rated R for strong violence and brief sexuality. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Sounds like an intriguing film. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In many conflicts worldwide, human trafficking or modern slavery is often among the most tragic consequences. And despite persistent efforts to eradicate trafficking in persons, this abhorrent crime persists. According to the International Labor Organization, over 20 million people worldwide are victims of forced labor. On September 16th, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations and December President of the Security Council, Samantha Power, stated that for groups like ISIL and Boko Haram, slavery has become one of their most versatile weapons of war, used to instill fear, to inflict suffering, to recruit followers, reward fighters, convert people of other faiths, reward combatants, and generate revenue. In Iraq and Syria, ISIL distributes women and girls to fighters as spoils of war, systematically rapes them, and sells them in markets like cattle. ISIL has even gone so far as to encourage the sexual assault of prepubescent girls and issue guidelines on how to treat the women and girls who have been enslaved. Boko Haram also exacts horrors upon those whom it has kidnapped and enslaved. On October 2nd, the group reportedly forced four girls and a boy to become suicide bombers in the Nigerian city of Maiduguri, where they self-detonated at a mosque during evening prayers. 15 people, including these kids, were killed, and more than 35 were injured. Witnesses estimated that the bombers were as young as 9 years old. Member states must commit to ending the conflicts that enable human traffickers to operate, as well as support trafficking victims. To address this in Iraq and Syria, where ISIL has enshrined systems of human trafficking and sexual violence, the U.S.-led 65-member coalition remains determined to destroy ISIL, stem the flow of foreign terrorist fighters, and restrict its funding streams used to fuel its reign of terror. The U.S. also continues to provide security and counterterrorism assistance to the governments of Chad, Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Benin to aid their fight against Boko Haram. Human trafficking in conflict is a scourge that knows no borders. That's why U.N. member states must individually combat human trafficking and coordinate efforts now to put a stop to this human tragedy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.